It's the same old story. It's been a long day at the job, or maybe it's just starting to feel long, and you feel that urge to stretch your legs and get a little bit of a break. You walk down the street, or maybe you get behind the wheel of your car, and you feel the weight begin to lift. You walk through the doors, and the sound of the place starts to clear the air. You get a table, you order your drink, you listen to the sounds of the bar, and soak in the conversation.
Welcome to the T&E Speakeasy, with your hosts, Caleb, Isaac, and Brianna. Listen in as they discuss the 1999 film, Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, those in between and affiliated to the Novice Leaders podcast. Here today, we are once again on the musical discussion train. And today we have, for the program, going to be talking about the musical and or TV movie or movie, I don't know exactly which this is, of Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat.
Yes, your pick for the series. So far, I've done Evita. Now following up with your pick, another one by Tim Rice and Andrew Lloyd Webber. And this one is, I'm curious what your history with this, Isaac, is when you first saw it.
I guess I'll be honest. I think this is, we might as well just rename this series, you know, the Andrew Lloyd Webber podcast, because I mean, that's really all it is. I don't know what your pick is going to be, but I swear if it's either like Phantom of the Opera or, I don't know, Cats or one of his other plays, or the Cinderella one that he just put out. I don't know. This one for me, yeah, this one. So this, at least the film that, you know, we're referring to right now, because it's kind of like, yeah, I guess, musical adaptations as well. This one is released in like either 1999 or 2000. And my memory of it is probably, yeah, either 2001 or 2002, because my parents have the VHS. I did not watch the I did not go and find the VHS for this. So it's probably somewhere in the house, in the garage there. But instead, no, I found a copy of it online, thankfully. In good shape as well, I must say. But this is definitely the first time coming back to this. And because, you know, you said, oh, you got to think of a musical. I'm like, well, this is the only one I can think of that I enjoyed as a kid. And you know, we don't have a musical adaptation in the movie theater as of Wicked yet, so can't really do that one at all, so I chose this one instead. And yeah, I coming back to this, it's a bit of research, and oh boy, I'm a bit ignorant on this. So what's but yeah, Caleb, what's your history with this, if anything?
Yeah, it's a long history stretching back to about like 3 hours ago when we watched it. Yeah, I'd really not heard of this much. I think maybe I'd heard the title, but
I don't. We've watched at least parts of it together.
Yeah, Brianna claims I have no recollection of this. Perhaps I was under the influence of a similar substance that I'm currently indulging in now.
Tea.
But otherwise, yeah, this was. I guess actually, I had heard some of the lyrics scattered from this movie because Brianna would just randomly sing them. But I didn't realize what they were for until we were watching it today. But Brianna, you have much more strong history with this one, so take it away.
I don't have that strong of a history with it. Just like when I was in Music Makers, when I was like 10, there was a production of it. And I don't remember anything about the production. I just remember the music, and I had the CD, so I listened to it a lot when I was a kid. That's it. I don't even remember having watched like the whole actual musical all the way through on TV or anything. Just I had the soundtrack.
Yeah, but clearly some of the music stuck with you, because yeah, I definitely recall every now and again some of these lyrics popping up just in as you were like doing chores or something, start singing them.
Well, yeah, I mean I do that with everything, though. Like, anything that I listened to when I was a kid, like, I can still recall all the words to all the songs. But I don't have, like, a super strong history with the musical or anything. I just liked listening to the CD probably between the ages of, like, 10 and 13.
Where did you guys watch the film?
YouTube.
I figured, okay.
But Caleb, like, rented it on YouTube. I don't know why, because there's free versions, but...
Yeah, I found a free version, and it pretty much is, I think, good quality.
Yeah, it seemed... We started the free one, and then he's like, I'm going to rent it instead, but it seemed exactly the same.
There was like, a 15% difference in picture quality, and that 15%, yeah, it mattered.
Fair enough.
To me, in the moment. Yeah, and it was coming back to this one, or coming to this one, I should say, not long after we watched Evita. It's done in a similar style where there's almost no dialogue.
Mm.
It's just singing all the way through. And I did look it up to see if it was also considered like an opera in its way, but they called it a sung through musical, at least on Wikipedia. I've never really heard that term before. I'm not super educated on musical technicalities, but it is interesting to see that that's more their style than more traditional musical, at least so far from what we watched. I think Cats was a similar thing too. Do you remember, Brianna, was there much dialogue in that, or was it more in this style as well?
Oh, I'm not sure. I'm not really a big Cats person.
Okay. but where to begin with this? This was, again, I was surprised coming in just at the length. I was like, okay, so it's not going to necessarily be a theatrical production. Like, what is this? I think me and Brian discussed, is it going to be like a filmed stage version? Is this going to be like a TV movie? And... right off the bat, when we get this introduction of all these kids going into this music hall, I was like, okay, like, what are we getting here? Well, one of the things I was going to ask you, Isaac, did you have strong memories of this? Revisiting it, were you taken by surprise by some of the stuff that you saw in this feature, or had you retained a lot of it from your childhood memories?
Allow me to maybe expand my introduction to this.
Sure.
So, I'm very familiar with the, I guess, how do you put it, the Canadian release of this, the recording, excuse me. There's been, again, according to title, there's been 5 recordings. This is my ignorance here. There was the, like, original concept album from 1969, and then apparently there's, like, the official, like, release, the London cast in 72. And I guess... there was a revival or something like that. Again, this is ignorance here. There was a revival back in 91, and then 93 and 92, or 92 and 93. There was different recordings. There was the Canadian version, there was the Los Angeles recording, and there's the London version, excuse me. And they each had different actors playing them, but the one that we're watching tonight is with, how do you say his name? Danny Osmond? Am I correct? Or...
Osmond?
Osmond, okay. No, Donny Osmond, excuse me. You familiar with him, Caleb Ball? Brianna, no?
I wasn't.
Okay.
I had heard of him and his family. I guess they're a musical family in general. I didn't do any research today, but...
he's a Mormon.
Yeah, he was someone that I definitely heard of growing up. But I don't really know why. But he's an interesting looking fella in this, and especially some of his... Brianna knows I was being a little bit mean when we were watching it. I kept pointing out his wrinkles. I was like, this guy has some very unusual wrinkles. I don't know what's going on with some of that stuff.
Aging is a normal part of life, Caleb.
I know. I couldn't help noticing. He's a very interesting looking man. But with a great voice, especially for his like big solo song. Me and Brianna had a little clap for him after that was done.
Well, I clapped for all the songs because they pause for applause after they finish the song. How can you not? I was saying, like, I have a hard time not doing that in theater musicals because they still kind of do the pause for applause when a song ends.
Yeah, we go to the movie theater. Yeah.
Apparently, at least in some of the research I heard during this, I guess, film, I would call it that, he was 42 years old playing Joseph. And he had been playing Joseph on either Broadway or in a production for quite a while. I think he had, like... 7,000 shows or something like that. So he was doing this for quite a while, I guess, in the 90s.
My goodness.
So if it looks like he is aged, then I mean, well, I'm going to give him like some credit for, you know, at least sticking to that character for quite a while. And, but I would, yeah, my parents were really into this musical. They had the soundtrack, and every time we would, you know, go on a car trip, this would be in the rotations, it would be, you know, one of the things that we would always listen to. So it pretty much, like, I know more of the 91 recording than I do this movie. But it's only because I didn't realize Donnie was in both that recording and in this movie. So that makes actually sense. Pretty helpful.
I'm pretty sure the soundtrack that I had was from this movie. I could be wrong, but everything just sounds so identical. I'm pretty sure.
And I'm curious for you, Isaac, if your parents watched this version with you. Because some of this, I was surprised, especially during the later turn of the movie. I was like, oh my goodness, some of this does not feel necessarily kids appropriate. Like me and Brianna were saying, like, oh, I'm sure that they would show this in Sunday school classes. But then there was a point where it turned and we're like, oh, no, like, this is probably not going to go too well, the Sunday school crowd.
I know I think I know the part you were talking about. I don't know if they did, but I did watch the film. I do remember that. I don't know if they watched it with me or if, you know, they're out of the house and they have a babysitter and it's just like, oh, put something in front of him so he can watch TV or something like that. And they put this on and I just like sit there watching it, just mesmerized. But yeah, not during this scene, of course, which you're referring to. Yes, it went over my head until now. I was like, oh, and I have gone back to listen to the album several times. And even before we just started recording, I was listening to it again because of just how much I enjoy it so much. And yeah, I guess the visually speaking, like in the songs itself on the album, it went over my head. Like I knew, and also I'm familiar with, you know, from the book itself, like what this is based off of. I'm aware of that scene, but yeah, the film definitely makes it a little bit more adult, or at least there's some implications there. But one last thing. I love this film, not film, but I love the musical so much that I think it was in either grades 2 or 3. I can't remember which one. My mother made me like a version, a coat of many colors for Halloween one year.
Oh, wow.
I love that.
And I still have the coat itself. Maybe I'll get a picture of it and, like, you know, you can add this to the description or something like that. But
that'd be cool.
Anyway, so yeah, and I've seen productions of this when it was in Theater Under the Stars many, many moons ago. And there was actually a family friend who was a part of that who played Joseph. And then years later in, what was it, a different production somewhere in Burnaby, he was Pharaoh. So that's how well I know this a lot of. Actually, was he? Yeah, no, I think that was a different one.
Oh, wow. So, yeah, quite tied into your familial history. That's cool.
Actually, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe no, never mind. I think he was Joseph in a different play. But so I think I've seen this 3 times on stage. But I don't really see this circulated in like I don't really probably has, but I haven't really seen it like be in any major productions, at least in Broadway across Canada. So I wonder. I hope one day it'll make a comeback, or at least show up at the Queen Elizabeth Theatre.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
Yeah, and this movie itself, I'm kind of surprised I haven't seen it talked about more as like a big cult musical movie.
Yeah, because it's so funny and weird.
Yes, very weird, very funny. And yeah, it just seems like there's a certain musical crowd that would really latch onto something like this. And I don't know if maybe they do and I just don't hear about it. But people like Rocky Horror Picture Show or Tommy, I feel like I could definitely see a lot of similarity here. And it does feel a little bit subversive for such a biblical story to do this particular take on it. But it's, yeah, it's super duper fun. And I was surprised to see Mr. Richard Attenborough showing up at the start there. That was one of the first things that I was like, oh, maybe this is going to be a bigger production than I realized, seeing him there.
Yeah, I was also surprised. And this is, as a kid, I didn't know who that was. And then as an adult, I'm like, oh my goodness, it's John Hammond.
Yeah. Yeah, and sitting right next to him, I mentioned this to Brianna, we watched it. The bigger man next to him, I forget what his character shows up to play later. Is it Potiphar?
I believe it is Potiphar.
Yeah, that guy, Ian McNeice. Yeah, another big British actor. Showed up in Doctor Who, of course I have to mention that. But he also played the Baron Vladimir Harkonnen in the TV movie of Dune. So every time I see him, I'm pleased for both those connections. So it's nice having him show up here. And his musical number, yeah, that's when the movie takes that kind of weird turn. It's almost like entering the monolith. It's like, oh, suddenly we're in this black void space and things get all strange. And yeah, then the weird half orgy, half sexual assault scene to poor Joseph there with his wife. I was like, oh my goodness, did not not see that turn coming.
I mean, it's there in the script. Like, if you read the script, aka the Bible, it's somewhat there.
Yeah, God, Caleb, why don't you just memorize the Bible?
of course, different. It's definitely not the same. Where she always kept asking, you know, hey, would you, you know, make love with me? And he would always say no. In this, it's a little like, you know, they adapted it a little more to be her commanding herself over him. So at least, pardon me if I'm getting it incorrect, but that's just, I think, how the scene goes or plays.
That's how I saw it.
Yeah, and I do remember actually the descriptions in the Bible. Yeah, it was actually a very similar outfit with the half exposed breast, just like that as well. I remember that part very distinctly.
Well, it's, you know, actually being truthful to the text. That's kind of nice.
Yeah, and I also remember in the Bible that the brothers at some point just become French too. That was that was another very unexpected turn, but a part that I just loved.
And it also is apparently the old American West.
Yeah, I don't know what was going on there. It does seem like Tim Rice and Andrew Lloyd Webber are maybe experimenting with some certain substances at this time. This was 1968 when this came out. So maybe LSD was still popping off at that time. Maybe they're doing it with Leonard Cohen. I know he was doing a lot of that kind of stuff around this time, too.
There you go. They're buddies.
I mean, I don't know if I would... you know, defend or anything like that, but I would at least say, like, okay, well, maybe they were tapping into different musical genres at the time that were underground and the populace wouldn't be so familiar with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I guess that's fair. Yeah. Although they did go right to the disco direction. I think disco was...
The disco was fun.
Or maybe not quite disco. I don't know what to call that. Psychedelic 60s dance party. But... That was also unexpected and super fun. That's one of the nice things about this, too, is it almost has a episodic quality in showing us all these different types of musical styles. I thought that was another nice little change. I feel like we're always getting something new here.
It's what reminds me so much of when I watched Evita for the first episode. I was like, oh, I could definitely see the DNA of Lloyd Webber and Rice in here. And I guess... the way they structure their plays, not the same, of course, but Evita also, well, as an opera, it does, you know, there is some like Latin based instruments in there, but then they go to, you know, other different musical genres, and this is the same. So I'm like, oh, okay, I can sort of see, like, you know, where the two kind of mix. And in fact, there's a lot of things I could see between Evita and Joseph, where there is some similarities of, you know, a person of like lower status, although Joseph had a family, unlike Evita. And again, theater wise, I'm not talking about the real Evita here or the real Joseph. We're just going by the productions here context. It's interesting how, yeah, Joseph, you know, came from, well, nothing other than a big family, and then became like the prime minister of Egypt, according to this.
Yeah, just on the Evita connection that you're bringing up there, there was even a song in this that was reminding me of a lot of a song from Evita. I didn't write down the names for the songs, but it was the first one where we were being introduced to Jacob and his family. It was making me think of the Rainbow Tour song. I don't know if you heard any of that there, Brianna.
Not really, but I was going to say, like, both musicals have the kind of like little interludes where they're just like, anyways, then this happened. So that's another thing that they have in common.
Yeah. And the narrator character just kind of carrying us through. Yeah. Nice little bridge character, which, by the way, she stood out in a particular unusual way with her fashion. She's always just wearing that blazer, walking around. And she's a very, very particular kind of dated looking British woman with her overall like makeup and her hair. And she just is another thing that adds to the almost surreal quality of this movie. Her just interacting with all these folks, popping up in all these different environments, but always looking the same. I thought that was quite an interesting choice as well.
The track you were thinking of is called Jacob and Sons / Joseph's Coat. Again, according to the Canadian recording, just got to be specific there.
Cheers. Yeah, that's the one.
I liked all the panning to the random children in the audience.
Yeah, again, another weird choice. I don't know why they had the kid audience there.
And then they had all the actors in the audience.
Yeah, that was a cute little twist at the end. Yeah, when it turned out that this was just like like all the teachers just, I don't know if they were just delivering the message, like just telling their little parts, or if they were dancing around on the stage.
Well, the kids were loving it, but do you remember that part where they were like, oh no, Joseph was sold into slavery, and then it pans to the two little black girls?
Yeah, no, that was a problematic
moment. That was weird.
I was like, oh, that's weird. Did you remember that bit, Isaac?
No, I did. I mean, I don't know. Yeah, I don't exactly know what to make of it. I'd hope there's no symbolism there. I really hope not. But if one wants to read into it, it's like, well, that's dated.
Yeah, it's like
it was the style of the times.
No, it just seemed a little bit unnecessary.
Yeah, lacking in some taste, but yeah, maybe sensibilities of that time.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, me and
just cuts to just like these two little girls looking like so sad and dismayed. It's like, oh,
yeah, yeah. And again, this was 1999. Me and Brianna have been watching Buffy and Angel lately, and Angel has a lot of just weird, awkward racial stuff that I don't know if they're trying to be aware or what. But it reminded me of a moment recently in Angel when, yeah. Something similar happened to some degree. So maybe just the 90s, not the best time for racial awareness. Oh yeah, what are some standout musical numbers for you guys, either in terms of sets or in terms of the songs themselves? Or how about you, Brianna?
Oh my goodness, how could you ask me that? You're really putting me on the spot. I don't know. I like the one at the end when they're singing about the golden coat flying out of sight.
Yeah, that was a pretty fun one. Isaac?
I don't want to just say the entire musical itself. I can't. I don't know. I honestly don't know if there's any. I think Joseph's Little Melody, what was it called? Close Every Door. Oh, that's, I love that one. That one's. I'm not saying it's my favorite of all of them, but at least just when he's, you know, down the dumps and he's lamenting over his lot in life. And
oh, yeah, that was a good song.
Seeing some words that may or may not prevalent to the 90s, I have no idea, or at least, you know, to the generation there, or just anybody really. Just give me a number. I'm only one person or whatever. It's like, geez, what is that supposed to mean? But that one was fun, and I also love the build up. I love the build up to Pharaoh, of where, you know, the narrator, she sits down, and then she kind of like, she has the kids sit around, at least in the film, and she, you know, tells them to come close, and she tells them about like the Pharaoh. She kind of builds the Pharaoh to what he is. And then we get the reveal of, you know, Pharaoh. Oh, that's so much fun. It's similar to the whole, like, oh, is in Evita, how, like, you know, in some interpretations, it's Che Guevara who is, you know, the narrator. Mm-hmm. And then this, it's Elvis as Pharaoh. So you can, again, see similarities where he just has fun with putting, like, real-life characters, I guess, or real-life people into these, I guess, roles. And this one, I think it works a little more than, like, Che Guevara connection. Although that one can also be fun if you turn your brain off.
Mm-hmm. Well, that, I feel like that worked better in the concept album, because when it got adapted to stage, they just took all the comedy out. Like, you see all the comedy in this one, and it's like, I really wish that they had made an adaption of Evita with the comedy that was originally there.
Yeah, because you could definitely feel the... And I've heard some of the concept album. I haven't listened to the whole thing, but of course, you playing it. But Tim Rice, he just has such an unusual sense of humor, too, and so many bizarre, clever lines. You can feel it throughout this, and yeah, definitely some of that's lacking in the theatrical version of Evita, and probably most of the stage versions as well. I think, like you said, it's only the concept album that retained that. And speaking of the bizarre, unusual humor, I did love that they kept, for some bizarre reason, I don't understand why, with switching up the accents and the musical stylings of the brothers, but the French one in particular, that one just stood out for me so much. I that was one of my favorites.
It was very funny.
It was just so out there.
So random.
Yeah.
Like, why are they French?
Yeah, I thought that was too good. And the brothers in general, I just really enjoyed their vibe. And I can understand why they would hate on poor Joseph. I mean, he was kind of an obnoxious, smug kind of guy, so it makes sense.
Yeah, I would probably throw him in a pit too.
There you go. Yeah, they're just a fun loving pair. I mean, he's kind of a wet blanket. I get it.
Yeah, I can also see that, where the fact that he was his father's favorite kind of went to his head, so I can understand maybe the arrogance, or, you know, high and mighty attitude he can get from that. And so the brothers kind of weren't happy about that and turned to drastic measures for that. Maybe not the best in their
Yeah, it might have taken it a bit too far, but...
I could see both sides being in the wrong, but even still, the way they went with it is like, okay, maybe it was a little too far in your guys' end, but I understand where you guys are coming from.
Yeah, and I really enjoy when we see them grab the goat and then just tear off its limbs. And then we get this little...
It's such a violent goat prop.
And then we see this image of the narrator talking, and they're just kind of revolving around her, and some of them have the limbs up by their face, so they're holding the corpse and kind of hugging it. It's just very funny.
Like, I want that goat that, like, you can pull off its limbs and it's, like, bloody inside. Like, that's so weird.
Yeah, definitely very weird. And I also enjoyed that for Jacob's, his, like, throne. They've got, like, this little bison, like, the just little antlers and a bit of the head on there. I thought that was kind of funny for the Western-themed number.
And it says Jacob and Sons.
Yeah, Jacob and Sons, yeah. Yeah, just fun to feel their creative spirit.
I gotta say, the production aspect of, I guess, this little TV film or whatever you want to call it, my goodness, the production of it is really good. Like, all the sets are really cool and I think very distinctive and different from each other. Especially, like, you know, the whole bit of Potiphar's...
Yeah, I really like that.
I guess, number. Good. I don't even know, like, what you would call that, but it's very distinctive and, like... That part as well reminded me of, again, I guess, Rice and Weber tapping into, in Evita, the whole rich angle. And it was more done there, but we can see that, you know, Potiphar is very rich and they kind of comment on that. And so I felt like they had a similar voice there with that. But in Evita, they make much more negative connotation there. And they look down upon the rich there. This one, not looking down upon it just so much as like saying Joseph's working for this rich guy.
Yeah, kind of parodying them. But no, yeah, I definitely enjoyed that style. And it did broach into like, oh, this is getting weird. This is some... I was thinking of like Terry Gilliam, something like he would do in Brazil. I was like, this is some out there styling, but very cool.
Yeah, I guess you know what? I guess visually speaking, it can resemble a bit of Brazil, eh?
And I enjoyed when they threw him down that little pit and it looked like he was falling for ages and just screaming.
Yeah.
I thought that was pretty funny for poor Joseph, too. Oh, and I love when Joseph starts doing his dream predictions and they bring in those two guys, the cook and the butler, and the outrageous styling of them, too. I was like, oh, man, this feels like something out of, like, like Brazil or the capital in the Hunger Games. I was like, they got some weird stylings in this little part of the world here.
Yeah, that bit, I do not remember how outlandish and... I guess out there they're caught. I do not remember this as a child, or at least if I did, it was much different. And even when they threw him down the pit into the cell, I remember something way different, at least as a kid, where it was all in slow motion. Like he was just falling in slow motion, like actually falling. But instead it's like, you know, him against like a blue screen or something like that. I get why they did that, but I literally thought like, you know, he was falling. And then we see like, you know, Potiphar and his wife up above, you know, like, I guess, cackling at him or something. But no, I was completely incorrect.
It's weird how our minds do that.
Yeah, and Isaac, did you recall the very obvious kind of gay stylings for those two guys? Where they were kind of hinting like, oh, maybe they got in trouble for... Yeah, maybe they were messing around, the two of them. Or I don't know if it was the two of them together, but it definitely seemed they were doing some sort of gay coding there in a humorous way.
As the narrator says, both in the doghouse were doing their thing.
Yeah, that was another one. I was like, oh, this would be, maybe the Sunday school audience would miss the context here, but the teachers, you'd think, would be like, oh, crap, I better turn this one off quick.
Yeah, it went over my head as a kid, and it wasn't until the research when there was some speculation on, like, yeah, you know, they could, the two of them could have, you know, been lovers or something like that. And yeah, it did not occur to me until now, so call me ignorant.
Yeah, but I thought that whole little bit was really fun when he was singing their dream predictions. And then the cook, he's too big to fit through the bar, so Joseph just opens it up for him to come in. He's not even trapped in the cell at this point. I was like, oh no, this is just becoming absurd. Yeah, and even before he got thrown in the cell, when it was like that half orgy scene, and it was all the women dressed in these like almost transparent tops with the little nipple... put onto the shirt there. I was like, this is a lot too. This feels, I was not expecting it to go in this direction. I thought this was going to be more of like a kid's program. So I did kind of wonder watching this, like, who was the audience for this? What were they planning to do with this? Was it broadcast on television? Was it just like a direct-to-tape kind of thing? I'm curious about what, you know, what that was.
Well, it says on the Microsoft Store that it was put out by Universal. So, yeah, I don't know. I assume it probably was made because, you know, I've always wanted, like, it's not like Hamilton on Disney Plus because that's an actual recording of the play. It's not Evita where that was an actual, like, film and released to theaters and had a box office and all that stuff and writer, director, and all that stuff. I mean, this has a director, and so it's like an in between of both where it's, it's definitely more of a stage production, but it's also still like a film.
But not completely.
Yeah, and you can tell they put some sort of budget into it for all the different sets that they get, all these costumes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they, I just wonder what they thought they were going to do with it, how this was going to sell. Because it's got the, initially, maybe you'd think it's more of like a kids production with all these kids running around, and some of the early sets look a little bit less bombastic than what we get later. So I'm just curious. Maybe that's one of the reasons it doesn't seem like it has as much of a cult audience, at least as far as we know, is maybe they didn't necessarily know how to advertise it to folks. Oh, but I just remember too, I did enjoy the scene when Joseph was in his little cage down there, and then all the little kids, we see them in the audience, and they've all got candles, and then they just walk in there, and you actually see that they're burning like real flames. I was like, oh, that's a lot of kids just holding flames right there on that set. A lot of young looking kids, but I was waiting for them to pull out Zippos, by the way. I thought that would have been funny too. So raise up their little lighters.
That would have been funny.
Yeah, and I was expecting also, because we did The Prince of Egypt last year, I was kind of surprised that there wasn't much of a sense at all of like a spiritual element to Joseph. I mean, it was more just about him wanting to follow his dreams. There was a little bit of lip service to some higher power stuff, but it didn't feel necessarily.
Yeah, you're right. He wasn't even really like, my dreams are coming from God. He's just like, whatever, I just have dreams.
Yeah, so I just thought that was interesting.
They mentioned the Bible, you know, a few times. Mentioned, you know, when like Potiphar's wife, you know, how does that lyric go? It's all there in chapter 39 of Genesis, mm-hmm. which you can just look up and see how it is like there. but yeah, the spiritual aspect of this, I haven't listened to all the way through Jesus Christ Superstar. So I'm not sure if he returns to that in a way. Like, I don't know if he has the same, or both of them, excuse me, the duo have a similar take on the spiritual side. I would think they probably don't, but I don't mind. Like, I don't know. Like, I mean, I assume there's probably certain people out there, religious people out there who would, you know, kind of say, call this, at least this film is gaudy, or at least the musical production as well as gaudy, or just similar to how, you know, maybe like Mormons would not look down upon, or maybe they don't like Book of Mormon. I kind of shrug in that sense, but for the spiritual side, I think it's taking a little bit more of a, I'm not gonna say humanistic, but it's definitely taking a more less spiritual side, not a secular side potentially, but just definitely more less of a spiritual note.
No, I agree. I guess there's that element of the him forgiving his brothers later on. I guess you could tie that into a more being connected with the, I don't know. I don't know if I would necessarily put that as spiritual. I'm not. I don't know. I don't necessarily know what to say for it.
Yeah, it felt like it was just like almost telling the story as if it were just like a true historical story versus telling it as if it was a religious story.
Yeah, that's fair. Just like using the base parable of it more than telling a direct retelling from the Bible kind of thing, or from whatever you want to put there.
Even though, of course, there were the biblical references, but just not very focused on like actual religion or God in any way.
Well, by the way, just for the mention of the Bible, I did love later on, because the narrator mentions like, oh, don't worry, I've already seen your future, you know how it's all going to turn out. And so later on with the Pharaoh, Joseph's just like going through the Bible looking for spoilers, like, oh crap, I need to figure out this dream, let me just do some cliff notes here. I thought that was quite funny.
The script. He read the script.
Yeah, I quite like that.
Yeah, that was funny.
I think the only potential, like, oh, okay, well, like maybe it's spiritual, maybe it's not, is him interpreting dreams.
Yeah, no, I guess that's fair. That's actually a detail of the story I forgot. we got to that part, I was like, oh yeah, I forgot about that weird little section in there. His strange little superpower.
Well, it's funny because it's in the title itself, like, which is even more funny because the title itself would think that he's going to be wearing this, you know, this coat of many colors, a multitude of many colors, but he really isn't. He doesn't, he only wears it for maybe like, I don't know, 2/5
yeah.
of the entire production.
It's that.
Like, you know, beginning and then the end when he gets it back, I guess when mm-hmm. Jacob remakes it or restores it. And the dream coat as well, like, one might also believe, like, oh, does when he wears the coat, does he get, does he have the ability to, like, have dreams or interpret dreams from that coat or what? But yeah. It's, like, goes in a completely different direction.
Maybe that was the spiritual component. It was this magical coat, and it saw that he was reading the Book of Dreams, so it decided to emphasize that power for him. I did like that he had the Book of Dreams, by the way. That was another fun little prop.
Hmm.
I was like, aw. And I also liked that his little song about his coat became his like main little bit that he would always return to. Just they would use different lyrics for it. I've heard what that thing's called in musicals as well. Is it just a reprieve when you keep using the same piece of music but changing the lyrics for it? I think that's it.
That sounds right to me.
Yeah, I know he used it again with the Pharaoh when he was telling his dreams there. So I appreciate that. I thought that was another really good piece of music.
Does it make you want to become a dream interpreter?
It makes me wish that I could be in a musical production similar to this. I would have loved to have been one of those nerdy little kids in the audience.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
Just singing along, making their weird little faces. It would have been so fun.
That would be fun.
And hey, these kids aren't that much older than us. When they were running in there in their little outfits, their little hip 1999 stylings, I was like, hey, that's not so different from what we were wearing around that a couple years later.
Actually, I mean, if this is 99... I'm in kindergarten by September, and I am in a school that requires uniforms. So if there's a real little kid there who's...
It's you.
5 years old? Yeah, that's probably me.
Yeah. Did your parents ever take you to a trip to England, and did you have a... Yeah. Maybe, you never know.
No, we wore sweater... Not, it's not sweater vests, but we wore uniforms. We didn't wear ties or anything like that. We just wore, like, you know... black jackets and black pants and white shirts.
I always wanted to wear a uniform in school. I think it was because I watched The Little Princess, and I was like, I want to go to boarding school, even though she was like really treated badly there. So I don't know why that made me want to go.
So many of those little kids thing, you get that wish of, oh, I wish I can go somewhere and have mean teachers to, you know, that I could battle against, overcome the adversity.
Do you seriously want to, like, you know, be in a production, or at least, you know, be in the shoes of Matilda? I don't know, man. I wouldn't go with that.
Kidding me? I would have loved to be Matilda.
Matilda had magic powers.
Yeah,
and at the end, there was a nice lady who took care of her, and she was happy.
That's true. I guess so.
Got to overcome her parents. She was so she spoke so well, all the clever lines that I wish I could have said as a kid.
Yeah, and she always sounded like she knew she was better than her parents, and she was a bully to them.
Yeah. I did, just as we were talking about the kids, I did love how crazy they would go at the end of certain numbers. Some points they'd be like standing on their seats, clapping. They're
like doing a standing ovation.
Yeah, jumping up and down. I was like, oh man, if it is just those teachers up there on stage, they've never been happy with their teachers. I got another funny bit that stood out to me. And again, they do some weird stuff with this narrator throughout. She's just moving from story beat to story beat. But I did really think it was a strange choice, but a great choice when the butler and the cook come to Joseph's cell. And then all of a sudden they cut to her and she's between the butler's legs, and she has to like lift up a little piece of his skirt so she can deliver her next piece of the song. I was like, what the hell was that choice? Did they just make that on the set? Hey, we think it'd be funny if you just went down there.
Why not?
I just appreciate those weird little touches.
I liked it when they had to open up the cage of his cell for that guy to go in.
Yeah, yeah. He was too busy tasting his own foods that he was, he couldn't fit through his cells anymore. Yeah.
Jeepers, man.
Hey, it was that time. They were making those kind of jokes. Me and Brianna were commenting that we really enjoyed one of the Pharaoh's men. Was a little bit of a bigger fella himself with the little hat. Or what kind of helmets were those that they had on? All the Pharaoh's guys with the...
Were they like calf heads?
Yeah, like calf heads. There you go, cow heads. Yeah, one of them was like a bigger guy, and for whatever reason, my eyes kept being drawn to him. And I thought he was doing some funny stuff too during that those end numbers. I quite enjoyed him. And at first, when we saw the ones that are like the women up there with the little blue hats, I was like, are they naked right next to those kids? But we realized that they just had really like skin tight body suits. Those were another one where I was like, oh, that's a little bit surprising as well.
And the blue people.
Oh yeah, blue people. Yeah, I enjoyed them as well. Yeah. Well, I'm curious, Isaac. Maybe you had better eyes than I do. During the whole the Paris number, those Canaan days or whatever that song was, the brothers kept dancing around the sign, and I always wished that they would do a little bit of more of a close up on it. But it was like a lost person's sign, and I kept trying to read, like, what does that even say on there? Who is that? Why did they put that on the set there? Did you notice that or read anything that said on it? Or
no, I didn't see it, but I wonder if it was like Lost Joseph.
Well, that's what I thought, but then I was like, well, but they told their dad that he was dead.
Yeah.
So why would they make a missing person sign?
Maybe his dad did it. His dad was just convinced.
And why would they put it in their house?
Well, I didn't know if that was their house or like a bar, like a tavern or something. I wasn't sure.
Yeah, or they were, you know, out in the fields.
But they were singing about how poor they were. Why would they go to a tavern? And then the skeleton lambs came in.
Yeah, I love that. That was so good. They all fell down and everyone just wept. Like, oh no, not our poor lambs. And I enjoyed when they came to go see Joseph and they're groveling and doing the little, like abasing themselves. I thought that was pretty funny too. Oh, and I really enjoyed when Joseph framed his brother and then we see him just like on the stairs in like a Christ pose.
He looked like he was dead.
Yeah, he looked like he was dead. As all the brothers are begging. I thought that was really funny too. Any comments there, Isaac?
It's only that I don't really have much to say about this other than like, you know, this was something that I had watched as a kid. But yeah, I don't know. Like, it's more interesting that you're saying this because to me, while I am coming back to this and realizing a lot of stuff, like, oh, okay, I didn't get that as a kid, but none of this stuff like stands out to me. I just see it as like normal. I just saw it as a matter of fact, like, oh, okay. It's just like, might be over the top or whatnot, but it just seems normal to me. Whereas like, this is for like, it's like a reaction channel for you guys right now. I'm just like, oh, I love this. I love this. And I'm just like, yeah, no, this is awesome. And I don't know what else to say about it. Cause I mean, what else is there more to say about it other than like, we all share enthusiasm for it.
Yeah, I think I only have a couple more standout little bits. I don't know if, Brianna, you have a little bit more. But, yeah, another thing that I did enjoy, Isaac, you were mentioning earlier about how you were recalling Joseph falling in slow motion. I was thinking when you mentioned that, perhaps you were just mistaking it with the foam corn that was falling in slow motion out of, like, the slot machine. I thought that was another really funny bit. I was like, why'd they put that in slow motion? It just made me laugh.
I would like to eat some giant corn.
It did look good. I'll admit it did. I was thinking I do like corn on the cob every now and again, except for the fact that it's so messy.
Really? I thought you didn't like corn on the cob.
I like the taste of it. I don't like that it's so messy. I wish that I could just decorn all of it because I hate eating by my hands. And
I don't know if you've ever heard of this, but there's this amazing thing called canned or frozen corn where it's decorned for you.
Yeah, for whatever reason, it just isn't quite as good. I don't know why.
You can also cut it off the cob.
Another bit I wanted to point out, and maybe Isaac, maybe you have some insight into this, because I was confused, and I loved it, but I was baffled. And that is during the Go-Go Joe disco scene. And they're dancing around, you know, everyone's in their 60s get-up, everyone's got their afros, even white folks got the big fake afros on them. And then all of a sudden, there's this weird old hippie dude, and he, I don't know if he makes finger gestures, if he's got like a joint in his hand, and suddenly the narrator and him and Joseph, they're like the center of the dance. And I was just looking at this old guy and I was like, why did they put that in there too? Is he supposed to represent someone? I don't know. I thought it was very, very funny as well, though.
It's funny because he looked like Alan Moore, but I also wondered if it was Richard Attenborough. Just, I don't know, like playing this.
That's what I thought at first too.
Guru, prisoner, something like that. Or I don't know, just... like father figure inside prison. I'm not too sure exactly, but I was wondering if it was him.
Yeah, my brain went to a weird place. I was like, is this supposed to be another famous teller of dreams or the future, Rasputin? Is this him and hippie? What? Hippie get up? I don't know why I thought.
Why that. Rasputin?
Was he the one? Wasn't he the one that would be like the? He would be the teller of the future. Wasn't that him?
I don't know. The only experience I have with Rasputin is from Anastasia.
Yeah, let's go back to the animated film, which we keep meaning to do, and see what was going on with that, since we, you know, he was non-existent in the play.
Yeah, that's true. Well, that was probably for the best.
Yeah, maybe I was thinking of him because he showed up not that long ago in Doctor Who. One of the villains was pretending to be Rasputin, was telling the future. So maybe that's why I was thinking of it. but either way, I was baffled by that old man, but another little funny, just bizarre bit in this bizarre little movie that, yeah, I definitely enjoyed. But otherwise, my notes are mostly tapped out there. So if you guys got a bit more, feel free to go ahead, but yeah, that's what I got for now.
So, watching the film right now, that picture is lost. Have you seen this man? It is Joseph.
Oh, it was Joseph.
It was Joseph. So it probably is, I guess it is maybe in like a different location, in like a tavern of some sort.
Yeah, it looks like a tavern because it's on my screen too.
And I don't know if that guy is actually smoking a cigarette or not. So I'm like, huh, wow, different time.
Well, there's smoke coming off of it.
Yeah, see, maybe Jacob, he just, he held out hope that his beloved son, his favorite son, would still be alive. That's why he repaired that coat, and he was going around leaving big old, have you seen this guy signs? How is he taking photos, by the way, too?
Maybe they told him the truth. Maybe they were like, he didn't actually die, we sold him into slavery.
That's a fair point. Yeah, they did change by that point. They were honest men after they were ruined and spent some time in a French winery or something. Yeah, it turned them into good people. I guess if Isaac, you don't have much more. Actually, there's one more thing I wanted to say. So we were talking about with Cats a little bit earlier, me and Brianna watched that, although I guess neither one of us remember it very well. But I was thinking that this feels much more in line with that bizarre musical as well, Cats, just in terms of the strange humor, the kind of out there stylings with the sets and things. It was just making me think of that quite a bit, and it made me curious to go back and watch maybe a more real production, because yeah, I've really only seen that movie that came out a few years ago, and maybe that was not the best example. But
no. You can watch the 90s movie. It's directed by the same person who did this.
Oh, yeah. I remember you mentioning that. That is interesting. It does make me intrigued. Yeah, maybe one of these days we'll watch that. I don't know. We'll see.
You're going to choose it for our next podcast, Caleb?
Oh, Isaac did lay hints that it was the Andrew Lloyd Webber series.
I'm hoping not. Nothing on those guys.
No, Caleb's choosing a non-Andrew Lloyd Webber one.
Yeah. No, I didn't realize the theme when I put together my pick, so...
It's funny you mentioned Cats and the 90s version, because I remember distinctly one of the previews on the VHS was that's how I knew about Cats, is that there was, I guess, a similar TV production, whatever you want to call it, in this, or with this. So I guess there's a connection there.
Yeah, that is interesting. Maybe released by the same company. I wonder if it's going to have some of these stylings. That would be unusual. Because that movie, as bad as it was, definitely felt like it was way out there. And if maybe it was done better, could be interesting. Yeah, that movie was just so bad. It was.
Yeah, they had Cats here, came to like the Queen Elizabeth Theater like 2 years ago, I think.
Oh, I didn't realize.
But we didn't go to it. It was like one of the add-on ones. It wasn't part of the subscription.
But yeah, I guess if we don't really have too many more places to go. Short episode for a rather short movie. I guess we can move over to final thoughts.
Yeah, it was a short movie, so that makes sense.
And Isaac, would you like to take it away for the final thoughts department here?
I would end this by, at least for me, saying I'm going to probably go and listen to all the other versions of this, the other four versions that exist of this play, because... Yeah, why not? I'll give it a listen to, and maybe my bias will still be with me, given that I prefer the, you know, I guess the Canadian version. Literally, that's just the one that I grew up on, so I'm no choice.
Yeah.
And yeah, it even affected me watching this again, where I'm like, oh, it's not how the songs are supposed to be sung, but like that's just my ignorance showing, I guess. But I do have definitely, if there's a desire, it is, I actually do at least one point. I don't know how it'll happen, but I would love to play Joseph in an actual like production of this musical.
Oh man, it'd be so fun. It's still my dream to be in a musical one day. It seems like it'd be so fun.
Why don't you just sign up? You could be in the ensemble of a community production, like, easily. They take anyone.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. Maybe I should start thinking about it. We do have a dinner theater right by our house, but
I guess it's true. Yeah, Brianna, what are your final thoughts for this production here?
I liked it. It was not what I remembered. It was definitely more almost like surreal than I remember, because I mostly just knew the songs, but I don't know if I've ever even fully sat through this actual movie of it. But I really enjoyed it. And I also think that I was mixing my memories with this and also with like the children's Bible that I had as a kid that I read all the time. And so it was like two different versions of the story in my head. But yeah, I definitely enjoyed watching this, and I would watch it again.
Yeah. And I echo similar sentiments. Yeah, no, this thing was a ton of fun. I did not really know what to expect coming in, but it was certainly not what I got. But yeah, it was thoroughly enjoyable. I hope that one day they put out a Blu-ray release so we can get it in a slightly better copy than the DVD quality version they have on YouTube here.
Or someone does a remake.
Yeah, even a bigger budget Hollywood production, if they can keep this weird style and weird spirit, I think they could give us something really cool and extravagant. But for what this is, I think absolutely, if you haven't seen it, it's worth seeking out, and you can find it for free on YouTube, because I don't think you'd be disappointed unless you don't like things that are bizarre. Some folks out there are like that.
Yeah, they're like, oh, well, it was just too confusing.
Yeah, you're jumping to all these weird sets. Why was there no regular story production? Why was there no dialogue? I could see that. But I guess, yeah, Isaac, thank you very much for the pick. I thoroughly enjoyed, checking this out. And I guess I'll announce my next pick. And I'm not 100% sure what version we're going to do yet, because I was trying to find the version that I wanted to do. It's Sweeney Todd. I originally wanted to do the 1982 stage version that they filmed. I've got a copy of it, but it didn't seem like it was available online anywhere, so we may have to go with the 2007 Tim Burton version, which is still good. It's missing some of the songs, and yeah, just a little bit of a different impact than that stage production that I really, really love. But both are worthwhile, so I guess we'll see what happens. But also, Brianna, thank you again for joining us for another musical discussion. I'm hoping we can yeah, maybe get another pick from you if we decide to keep this going. I think it's been quite a bit of fun so far. I'd love to keep it going.
You're welcome. Don't forget to send me my e-transfer as payment for participating.
There you go. Yeah, unfortunately, yeah, we got to keep paying these guests or else they'll stop showing up. Isaac, would you like to take us out?
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, those in between and affiliated, for listening. Hopefully it was entertaining. I highly recommend, at least, you know, my pick, at least, to go listen to this, because I think even if you don't like the, you know, version, the TV film that we watched, I think just as, you know, soundtrack to listen to or something to listen to in the background, I think this is a lot of fun. If you can't get into the film itself, give the music a listen to, because I think it's very catchy. But until then, any dream will do. Peace.
And I could not have expected the ride that we did end up getting. Isaac, say something.
Well, what do you want me to say exactly? I'm at a loss for words on where to go with this.
Well, that completes the podcast.
Yeah.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, those in between for and affiliated for listening to us. And till next time, we'll have Caleb's pick on the for the next one, whatever that is. Anyways.